Welcome to the Trades Podcast, a podcast about the business of home improvement and promoting the trades to young adults.
Yes, that's right. We are live. How you doing here today, Eric?
Doing great.
Awesome. Yeah, we're here recording here at the BBB right here in Phoenix, of all places, because, you know, us, Jeff and I, we're usually recording out there in San Diego.
Yeah, San Diego Better Business Bureau at the Ignite Studio, and they also have one out here in Phoenix, and this one is very nice.
Yeah, we're excited that they were able to invite us over, and we got some members of the BBB out here in Phoenix to, you know, just pop in and get a feel for what the job market is over here, talk to you about the trades, and talk about you and your profession. Eric, go ahead, introduce yourself.
Yeah. Hey, my name is Eric Newton. I work with Kurtz Auto Repair. We are a full-service repair facility in North Phoenix. I've been here for over 35 years now. Been great working with the BBB. We actually do counseling with them on auto repair litigations and things like that. So it's been a lot of fun. And they reached out and said, hey, we're doing a podcast, and said, do you want to come down and talk with these guys?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
I think the BBB is actually, they handle a lot of complaints.
Yes. It's
definitely a whole department for that. And automotive is something they get a lot of calls about.
Yes, they do. They beyond the council for the automotive complaints, they say the worst is the ACs.
Is it?
Yeah.
Well, out here in Phoenix.
Yeah.
It sounds like it definitely needed out here.
Yeah.
But you've never had a complaint though, right, Eric?
From my business?
Yeah, to the BBB.
If you make everybody happy, you're lying or something, because you can't make everybody happy. I don't care how good you are.
You're a nonprofit auto shop then.
Yeah.
Huh?
No, not a chance. We all got to make our living. We all got to do what we got to do. We all got bills to pay. So anybody that says they're nonprofit, they're lying.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Even nonprofits can't. They have to make some profits to stay in business.
Yep. They do.
But I was reading on your website. You definitely have an attitude that comes out on the way you present yourself on the website anyways, about customer service and honest recommendations. And, you know, we don't do everything.
No.
But what we do good.
Yes. Our thing is the customer's number one. Unfortunately, we can't always see eye to eye, and we can't always agree and do what the customer wants us to do. But I'm going to give you the best experience I can. I'm going to treat you right. I'm not going to lie to you. Because I can look at any vehicle. I don't have to make something up. I can find work on every single vehicle that comes in the shop without lying.
Yeah.
So there's no reason to be, you know, dishonest with the customer. There's no reason to, take advantage of them. It's just, you know, I'm going to give you an honest job, an honest price. And, you know, we try to be transparent. We go out, we give them gifts, you know, we talk with them. We want you to feel like you're part of the family. That's our biggest thing. You know, our family helping your family. We want to be part of your family because we know automotive repair is something everybody's going to need. Mm-hmm. But it's not always convenient. Things get expensive. I mean, we talk about expensive. What's went bonsai in the last few years is just mind-blowing. I'm surprised at some of the pricing of what parts have had to go do and all kinds of things like that. It's just mind-blowing. So, and then with the manufacturers trying to comply with government standards, that's put a whole new level on all these things, because now they've want the fuel economy standards so high that the manufacturers have to cheap out on the quality of the product that they're putting in the vehicle. Mm-hmm. So we are actually seeing engine problems at 100,000 miles, where 10 years ago they were 200,000 to 300,000 miles before we had engine problems.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, you know, and I got to communicate all this to my customers. They'll, let's go buy a new vehicle. Okay, this new vehicle now I'm going to tell you is going to have problems sooner than that one you just sold.
Yeah, I definitely got some questions for you about how the car works and some things like that that we've talked about and being prepared for. But how'd you get into the automotive business, Eric?
Yeah.
Well, that's a part of the family thing again. I'm actually the son-in-law to the owner. Me and my wife were dating in high school, he come to me and right after graduation and said, hey, I think you have some mechanical aptitude. You know, I've been hanging around the family, you know, looking at his daughter, and I think it was more or less, he says, if I can keep my eye on you, I can make sure that my daughter eats. But anyways.
Was that before or after you got the, hey, boy, you better.
Yeah.
That's my baby.
Yeah. I think that one come a little after. So anyways, but so I was working actually in the irons business. We're okay. Doing welding and stuff, working with my dad and his boss. And so the owners, the actually my old boss and my father-in-law were actually brothers. So okay. They kind of talked to each other and said, hey, do you mind if I steal them from you? And he says, I don't care. So that's kind of how it had started. And I got thrown right in the middle of some of the crazy electronic diagnostics back in 2000. Basically, it was August of 2000 when I started.
Okay.
And so the guy that was getting replaced because he was moving on to do other things, he'd already been signed up with some electrical classes and things like that. And so I dived in straight into the car's electronics and everything and really didn't know much about, I mean, it was kind of, I was mechanically inclined. Like I said, I was working with my hands already and things like that, but it wasn't one of those things. And so that's where it was, you know, almost 24 years ago now. So that's
great.
Just been running in that upper end of the automotive diagnostics and electronics and everything.
Very good.
And that was in the heat of like 2000s. I mean, you got somewhat of some hybrids and more electronics being put into vehicles.
Back in 2000, there wasn't much of that, but it was, they were, 96 was a big change from old computers to new computers. 96, the government put a mandate on all the manufacturers. They had to follow a form of how things worked and how to code everything, you know, all these OBD2 codes that you hear about nowadays was actually put in place in 1996.
Right.
So I got started when all that was just starting. And then, yeah, went through the hybrid coming on. Now the electrics are coming on. And so it's, I'm never done going to school, never done learning.
Right.
Yeah. Well, as the evolution of cars keep changing, you're definitely going to have to keep your education going.
Yeah, that's something that we consistently, I'm asking, I got, you know, now six guys out there working in the bays doing things, and I'm always asking, hey, I've got this coming up, what do you want to go to? We pay for all of their training because that's part of it. I mean, I don't expect you to give your time without me giving you something for it, and so I pay for all the classes.
Very good.
Oh, that's great.
That helps make sure engagement with your employees.
Yeah.
They feel like this is like a learning and progressive career. I get to keep advancing in my career. I get more and more proficient at things. It gives a little bit of self-fulfillment, I'm sure.
Yeah.
The classes.
Yeah, it does. And, you know, and we benefit as a complete company in the end, in all reality. If they Absolutely. Understand what they're doing, then I give a better experience to all my customers and everything.
Yeah, that's one thing we talk about in the podcast is the culture of a company a lot. I mean, we have a labor shortage, and if you have a bad culture, you're losing employees, you're not attracting them.
No.
It makes it even harder. So as you educate, give purpose to your employees' jobs, you know, it helps with the culture and keeping them there, keeping them engaged.
Yeah, we work really hard to keep that. We have actually have one guy that's been with us right at 20 years, several employees have been there 10, 15 years. And so that is something that we, sorry about that, that we try to cultivate because we lose money when we have to change people.
Absolutely.
Because when you have to retrain somebody, because even though they might have an automotive knowledge, they don't know how we work. And when you have to change the procedures on how you're doing things, everybody's not, nobody's making money for the first little while. And so when we work, we'll do more for an employee than we probably should to try to keep them if they're actually a good employee. So it takes a while to get fired from us.
Yeah. me and Danny were driving out here and we were talking about you in the automotive shop, and he wanted to know what ASE stands for.
Yes.
Certification stuff.
It basically means automotive service excellence. So basically it's a bunch of tests, kind of like medical school, but we just, or, you know, they got the arborist test and things like that. Each field has a little test. while, so basically you've got 9 sections and each section is a different part of the car and its components. And then it's a barrage of tests. If you see this happen, if you see that happen, what do you expect? What do you expect? You know, and it's a bunch of different questions that, unless you understand really how a car works, not that you just, oh, I'm Joe around the corner and I can change your water pump. He doesn't know how your car's working. He's just taking bolts off and putting them on. Mm-hmm. But to actually be able to look at it and understand it and know how it'll affect different systems, that's part of that testing. So there are 9 basic tests in that. And then they go to the advanced one, the electronics, the hybrids, the electrics, all that stuff. And then you've actually have the other side of it that we don't have any involvement in, but is the body repair. They actually have testing for all your body shops, whether you know how to bondo correctly, all that stuff. And that's all. So anything to do with cars, trucks, even your buses and things like that, they all have an ASC certification in that direct area. So they got a pretty broad spectrum, and they basically test everybody to know whether you know what you're doing or not what you're doing. Here, one thing too is that they don't give you any certification until you've actually have 2 years experience. Mm-hmm. So you get in this and get started and get your experience, and then you go take your testing, and then you go through. And once you go through your testing and you can show you're proficient and stuff, and this is what we base a lot of our pay structure on, because if you can tell me you know what you're doing, I can trust you. Yeah. I can release you and let you go and just do what you need to do without having to watch you. And the less I have to watch you, the more money you're making me, and the more I can do what I really need to do. So it's how we gauge how well they're doing. And then, you know, again, it changes their pay structure.
So each automotive technician will have the chance to take that test.
Yeah. And like I said, each test, it's a 9-section test. So you can't do all those at once because they are long. They're 2 hours or so for each test. Mm-hmm. So you're going to have to go back in multiple sessions and do it, because you can't sit down and just do all 9 tests at once.
Right. And as we dove into that ASE side of things, being certified and whatnot, there's the consultant side of things also, right?
Yeah. The consultant side is our front counter people, the people that talk to the customers, because the technicians, you know, you've got really 2 different classes of people that usually are at shops: the people that can talk to people and the people that know how to fix it. Typically, they're not the same.
Got it.
Occasionally, you'll have one that's good with talking to customers and knowing customers and how to talk to them and whatnot, and they have good mechanical ability. Rarely is it that way. So when the consultant side of things is basically, do you understand enough basic knowledge, not the in-depth, not the repairs, but basic knowledge to at least talk to your customers and no type of questions they're asking? What is this? What is that? Can you answer those basic questions? And we have those consultant certifications also up front.
Yeah, it's one of the things they do, verify availability on parts. Like somebody's walking in, they need a new blank for the car, and you're like, not sure if it's available.
In our shop, now every shop handles it a little different. We actually have, because we are large enough, we actually have a dedicated parts guy. So if we have questions about, hey, how quick, where can we get this part, we just give it to him. That's his job. So our service consultants don't do that because we have enough volume that they are just talking to customers all day long.
Fantastic. That's great. That's sure. I mean, it's one of the things when a company grows, it creates positions.
Yes.
You know, it's not just more dollars for the owner.
No,
you know,
no.
It creates opportunity for the employees to be able to advance and learn more or different subjects.
And that is one of the things, that part of the culture that we like to build. Me and Kurt started off as just 2 of us, like I said, almost 24 years ago. And we've grown to 16 employees now. And one thing that Kurt always said was, I don't want to take so much from the company, I'm hurting it. So he's limited his pay, actually, and 90% of the profit stays in the company. So we're actually, all the dollars stay in the business accounts, and he doesn't take it a lot personally. So it's one of those things that he says, I don't want to be driving, you know, brand new vehicles, buy a huge house or nothing, and these guys are hurting. You know, I'm going to keep it in the business. If you guys need tools, if you guys need equipment, if you guys something I can help you with. Because if you're happy and feel good here, mm-hmm. I'm just naturally going to make a little bit more money. I don't have to rape the company to do all
this. He took his salary and was able to take care of his family and live a comfortable life.
Yeah.
And he's getting close to retirement.
He is. He's talking about, I mean, he's semi-retired now. He comes in for a few hours a day. Mm-hmm. He just makes sure that we're just not, you know, doing something really dumb and crashing. He looks over the books and things like that. So, but I give it 2 or 3 years and I'll see him less and less. He's almost 70. So he'll be 70 in November this year. So,
yeah. And that's just going to put a little more management responsibilities on you as he goes.
And that's the transition where we've been in the last year or so is I'm pulling out of doing this. I've tried to push on enough of my diagnostic ability and stuff like that, that I'm actually just kind of what I guess you would call general manager now. I'm just overseeing everything. The only one I got to answer to is Kurt. So, I mean, as long as I'm not doing something really dumb.
Well, again, that goes back to, you know, as things progress, it creates opportunity for everybody in the shop.
Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah. And I mean, him being the example that he's already pretty much set as that foundation of being a good leader is, I mean, really what it sounds like that Kurt is. And, you know, him just wanting to take care of his employees is a huge thing, because that's something we actually just talked about in one of the last episodes was why employees are leaving, you know, their jobs.
Yeah.
And specifically within, you know, a trades area of working with your hands on a daily basis, backbreaking work. You know, if your culture is not right and you don't have a good leader or foundation at the top, then, you know, you're going to see a lot of a turnaround. And there's a lot of the trainings that you already said, the company's going to be taking care of that for the employees. So that helps out a lot. And like you said, the sense of fulfillment behind it when they can apply it and then ultimately, you know, make the customers happy. It's a huge thing.
Yes. Yep.
So one of the things me and Danny talked about when we were setting up for the interview, Eric, was the technology behind cars has changed. You know, my first car was a 1960 something Impala. You know,
don't want to date yourself, huh?
No, that's fine. Yeah, I'm old, man. And you know, I could change out the parts myself. You know, didn't have YouTube to help me learn it, but it's, you know, pretty mechanically straightforward. You know, you pull these bolts, part comes off, go down to the parts store, put it back, new one back on.
Yeah.
Now you take apart a part.
Can you even find the bolts?
Can you find the bolts? But also, I mean, one of the things that we're going to do a little interview of a shop teacher in next month. And he's talking about the first thing I got to do is electrical safety.
Yeah.
So what's the transition of cars, you know, and
that is one of those things that's just really been mind-blowing is how much that they're trying to do with electronics, because electronics are so much faster than mechanical. Yes. So we started off, you know, with emission standards and all that stuff. If you know, ever had one of the old Hondas or something like that, or even the old Chevys, we called them spaghetti bowls because they had vacuum mechanical running everything, and there was vacuum lines everywhere. And you'd break one of those or something, you know, things get hot under the hood, rubber deteriorates. And it just caused wreck on havoc on emission systems and things like that. Now we're doing all of that electronically. It's way more sensitive, you know, we're way cleaner and all that stuff, but it comes at a cost. So I've got to learn, I got to know these systems. Unfortunately, those electronic systems, the processes of going through them, things like that are just, you know, cost goes up. We find a lot of times that finding an electrical problem is 90% of the time, fixing it 10% of the time. So it's not, you know, the fix that actually is costing so much anymore. It's actually the process to find the problem.
Yeah.
You know, especially if you get like I had an older vehicle here that just would intermittently just run goofy, and it was tracing it down, and you got, you know, lab scopes and meters and all kinds of things hooked up, and it's like, okay, everything looks good here, and then it drops out. What's going on? And basically, I had to yank the wiring harness out of the car for a little tiny rub, because the car was old enough that it just rubbed through the harness, and one little wire was touching and just causing intermittent havoc. Wow. But it's just fixing it was no big deal. It was finding the problem that was just taking forever. So, yeah, it's been quite an ordeal. in the ability, and again, this is where you have great technicians and good technicians. A great technician understands how the system is operating and knows how to look at it. A good technician says, well, I know what systems act, so I'll just throw a bunch of parts at it and maybe I'll fix it. And then when you throw a bunch of parts at it and it's not fixed, then you've actually got to turn it over to a great technician that knows how to look the system over.
And explain it to the customer.
Yeah.
That's probably the hardest part.
Yeah. And again, they're service advisors. They're really good at that. That's their thing. They'll take what I say in technical terms
and break it down
so they can a little bit better understand it. So that's something that, again, as the technician and the ability and the knowledge, I'm not a great person to talk to customers because I could talk about, you know, doodads and what's its, and they have no clue what I'm talking about but to them, they just want to know, okay, can you fix it? And how much is it going to cost me? Yeah. That really is their bottom line. And they don't need the technical term a lot of times unless they ask.
Right. Yeah. Right. But knowing that, you know, you have an ASC certifications and they see that stamp, because I'll see that at the automotive shops and you'll understand that. It's like, oh, that is a, you know, now I'll know for sure that it's.
Yeah. And this is the word to the caution is I can get an ASC in the steering suspension, let's just say, you know, because that's its own component of itself. And I can display ASC and still not have an electrical understanding. So that is unfortunately not completely accurate, because I can get an ASC placard to say I got ASC techs and stuff like that and not be certified in everything I'm trying to do.
Right.
So it is, if, you know, it's one of those things that you know, do you have what they would call an ASC master tech? That means they've shown proficiency in all the 9 main categories.
Okay.
And so that is, you want to look for the ASC master certifications, and that's the 9. And I've got 3 people that have the master certification. Oh, wow. So,
great. Yeah.
That's pretty cool. So I had a question for you. Forward thinking.
Uh-huh.
How long before you think a vehicle shows up with no driver, pulls into your thing right now, and you got to walk out and plug in and see what's wrong with that autonomous vehicle?
Technically, the technology is there right now.
Yeah.
I see so many problems with it. You would literally have to have 90% of the vehicles out there have that technology, and we don't have that, because what'll happen is they'll all integrate with the system, but you can't take into account human interaction always. Yeah. They base algorithms on, you know, what typical driving should be, but if you've got human interaction, they can do something outside of what they should be doing. So it's a really hard thing to do. And you come down to basically an ethical question too. If that autonomous vehicle gets in an accident all by itself, who's responsible?
I think they're trying to figure that out right now.
Yeah.
And so is it the programmer's fault? Is it, you know, a mechanical failure? You know, then it's the car's fault, but then who pays for it?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So that's, I really think it'll be quite a while before you see that.
Yeah. It's kind of a leading question too, because we talk about the trades here in the podcast, you know. Are your mechanics going to be replaced by robots because of autonomous vehicles?
No, because you don't have the ability to put a robot in to probably be able to do every single scenario. While you could probably put robots in, they tried this somewhere, and I don't remember exactly where, for a tire change shop. They tried to just do all robots. It didn't go through, because I don't know if the cost was high because of just the startup fees or whatever, but a robot can pull a car in, put it up on a hoist, change it, pull a tire off, change the rubber, balance it out, put the tire back on. It can do that, but it's hard for the robot to actually physically get in and get into fine-tune wiring to actually, you know, test the signals out of it and things like that. So there's some of that you could probably get replaced by automation. I kind of highly doubt it, unless we're talking 100 years down the line, nothing we'll ever see. It's potentially possible, but
I don't see it happening in any of our lifetime.
If it's happened, it's probably not in our lifetime.
Actually, I think to make it happen, in my opinion, a vehicle needs to be simplified. So it's like a unit goes in where the engine is. If there's a problem, that unit comes out, and that unit does energy integration, all the electronics. It's just like you know, pulling the computer out of a, you know, the hard drive out of a computer.
Yeah.
You know? And it does everything else. You got four little motors on each wheel.
But even then, on a computer, you pull out the hard drive, it still might not fix the problem.
Yeah. I think we're a long ways. A long ways from that.
Yeah. Nothing that I think we'll ever see.
No. And then, a young adult looking to go to work in the automotive industry, and his dad was a, you know, rebuilt the 65 Chevy or whatever, you know, but everybody can relate to growing up and being around race cars and things like that.
Yes.
I don't think the automotive industry is going to be replaced.
No.
In a long, long time.
The problem with that is, and the problem with autonomous vehicles is there are too many people, while there's a fair group that just want to get from point A to point B, how many of us really like to just get out and drive?
Absolutely.
I'll get up a Saturday morning and say, I don't feel like sitting around the house. I'll go put 100 miles on my car just driving around, you know?
I'll go burn a tank of gas.
Yeah. I mean, it's, what else can I do for 40 bucks, you know?
Well, and the recreational aspects to it, of the dune buggies and off-roading and rock climbing and, you know, race car and, you know, street racing. All that's fun.
Yeah. You know? You're not gonna pull out that element, unfortunately. Now, the technology, how we get those and what we're gonna do with it is definitely gonna be changing.
Absolutely.
But you're not gonna pull the driver out of the car. And, you know, like I said, you'll get a lot of people that just wanna go from, I just gotta get from home to work today, and there'll be some type of automation for that. I think that's very feasible. But I think you'll still get the guy that on his weekend wants to go and drive the countryside, and you're not going to automate that.
Yeah, I totally agree.
Yeah.
Yep. And we're here recording at the BBB Ignite right here in Phoenix, which is awesome. I mean, you said you're a litigation consultant for them in that sense?
Yeah. Basically, there is a council team that when they have automotive repair complaints. Yeah, that the business and the individual cannot resolve. Mm-hmm. It goes into our committee, and we decide with the automotive information and knowledge who's really at fault. We decide whether the customer is being an idiot or whether the shop is being an idiot, and then we hand the back to the people. Say the shop needs to pay the customer. The customer needs to just wash their hands. The shop did everything they could for you, and you're just being an idiot. So it's you know, and we've had to go both ways. Unfortunately, we see a few shops that commonly pop up in our litigations, and 90% of the time they're not being ethical, fair, whatever, with their customers. They didn't diagnose it right, whatever. And so we do hammer shops pretty good. Mm-hmm. Like I said, okay, most people are trying to be reasonable. Unfortunately, and in the automotive stigmatism, we do have, unfortunately, some hacks out there that are do put a bad name on all of us. But I will tell you, 90% of our shops out there are probably just trying to do it right. Everybody's human. Everybody's going to make a mistake.
Yeah.
We do not see all the complaints just because they handle it like they're supposed to. Mm-hmm. And we just see the few that
they're escalated mainly. Probably just,
and so that, and that's what we see. So
yeah, but and that's one of the reasons why you and your team over at Curtis Automotive has won the ethics awards, right?
We were a finalist in 13 or 14. I don't remember. You know, that's bad on my memory. I'm getting old. 15, we were a winner, and then in 20, we were a winner again. So. And that was, you know, we were just Arizona back in 15, and then now the whole Pacific Southwest region was in 20. So we really covered a lot of ground when we got that award over the whole Pacific Southwest area. So,
yeah. And it is a very tough competition to be able to do that. And you probably haven't even taken the effort to apply for it in the last few years either.
No, we haven't. And we can actually go apply again because they allow people that have went through it to reapply. I think it 3 to 5 years. I don't remember. We're right there.
Okay.
We're at that mark. So, and what's kind of neat about it is once you've actually went through it and been a winner, you're allowed to come back and be a judge for the next few years.
Okay, cool.
So
I didn't know that.
Yeah. So once you've actually you're a winner, not just a finalist, you actually gonna be a winner. Mm-hmm. You come back in that realm. And what's crazy is it's not by company type, it's by company size. Mm-hmm. So they do those awards from 1 to 10 employees, yeah. 10 to 20. And so I'm not competing against automotive. I'm competing against everybody that's in class 2 or 3. I forget which class we're in. Businesses in that whole category. So,
And it is a huge time commitment for staff to put that package together.
It is very. My wife is kind of an English major. She didn't go to school for it, but that was just what she was excellent at, and so. That is, she is actually the one that actually writes most of it for us. But again, you gotta be, you know, back up everything with information and everything like that. So
yeah,
she's very good at writing, and we're there to do everything right.
Yeah, so. take pictures throughout the year of stuff that you're gonna use to submit in the submitting process.
Yeah, and you gotta giving back to the community. Give back to the community is a big one in that, and we're, you know, to help with Phoenix Children's Hospital. We're committed to the BBB. We're committed to multiple different things that they want to see. You just can't be a taker business. You got to be able to give back. And Absolutely. That's part of that award too, is you're a give back business.
Yeah. Absolutely. Totally.
Yeah, I mean, that's a huge step, in a journey through the BBB of, we've been to the Pacific Southwest Torch Awards right there in San Diego. And that was just, you know, an experience. One, to see people throughout the community is a huge thing that BBB has been able to establish through these communities, and specifically the Pacific Southwest, of that community behind the BBB, and what that, having that plaque and having that, you know, displayed on your website or at the business, what that actually means. And for years, I mean, I know that, Jeff, you've always mentioned that the BBB has been just an establishment, a stamp of approval for being a business owner within a community.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. The company I've retired out, we've been a member for 20 years. So,
yeah.
And I looked at that Torch Award. It's like, I don't have the staff to do that.
Yeah, it's a fantastic endeavor, and it is a lot of work, but it's really rewarding. Mm-hmm. when you get to say, hey,
yes,
I am as good as, well, and I hate to, I mean, it sounds like you're boasting, but I am as good as I think I am. If other people have chosen me, other people have went through everything I give them. I mean, they really go through your financials and make sure you're doing all that. They go through, they ask a lot of internal questions, and you're just not fumbling your way through this thing. It they really dig in and
no
check.
No bluffing,
in.
Huh?
No, you ain't bluffing this one.
Right. Very good. Well, congratulations on getting that, and I hope you have one here soon in the future.
Yeah.
Yeah. We got, let's see, we got right here. This is going to be for all the car owners out there.
Okay.
3 tips for, you know, that you would give to car owners out there right now, whether it's regionally, you know, where we're at in Phoenix, or go national or even all over.
This will probably get me in trouble, but number one tip, don't listen to the manufacturer. I will tell you, they are pushing our services 10, 15,000 miles. Mm-hmm. What they have had to do to comply with the government ratings for fuel economy and emissions, all that, have actually degraded the quality of the product they give you. And then they want to make it a seemingly cheap endeavor, and so they're telling you change your oil every 10 or 15,000 miles. That is the worst thing to ever do to your vehicle. If you are a regular everyday driver, things like that, 5,000 miles on your oil changes. If you're an over the hall, over the road person, that somebody like, you know, you go, you're like snowbirds, or you're pulling your camper around like that, you can go close to 10,000 because you're not getting the start and stop. You're continually driving. So everyday driving on your regular everyday vehicle, 5,000. Your diesel pickups are a little bit, they got a lot more oil, things like that. You can go to 7,500 max. If you're, like I said, you're always running cab drivers, things like that. They can go a little bit further because their car's always running. They don't have the cool down and the heat up process that actually breaks things down. So they actually can go probably closer to that 10, but never would I say over 10. So that's where I'm going to say, I totally disagree. I've seen too many problems at 80, 90, 100,000 miles on $10,000 engines because they went 15,000 miles. What's my manufacturer said I could. I'm sorry, your manufacturer now just cost you $10,000.
Yep.
So that's
number one, right?
That's
there.
Number one.
Yeah.
Number two, here in Arizona, tires. Tires, okay. tires. 5 years old max. We have way too many blowouts on the freeways. We have, you know, wrecks, all kinds of damage because tires here in Arizona at 5 years old degrade so fast that the rubbers will actually, and that's anywhere. Southern California, you got a little more humidity. You still got some heat, you know, all the way through New Mexico, Texas, anywhere we've got the heat. Mm-hmm. 5 years. And then with the tires, legal minimum limits, 230 seconds. Four is your best to start replacing tires, because from 4 to 2, while it's still legally able to be driven,
that's the amount of tread.
Yeah, that's the amount of tread left. Your stopping distance in wetness dramatically increases. So we don't have a lot of wetness here, but we do have our monsoons. Mm-hmm. You know, you guys in your California area right now are getting tons of rain.
Absolutely.
But you're, and you know, all the Midwest, all those guys that always got wetness, 430 seconds is really the minimum I would suggest people driving on. And if people drive normal amount of driving anyways, they're replacing them about every 5 years anyways, that limit that we like, because they wear a tire start out around 10 to 12, depending upon brand size, what type of tire you get, 10 to 12 mil or 30 seconds. Mm-hmm. And so in that process, you'll wear down to about 4 in 5 years, so that we just kind of correlate those to about 5 years, and that's that. So tires are probably one of those biggest things. I'm going to say is just, you know, we see way too many problems because people just don't take care of them. Check your air pressure. If you're not checking it, and that's part of, go back to step one, sorry. If nobody's opening that hood until 15,000 miles down the road, how many things have changed in 15,000 miles?
Yeah.
We want somebody looking under that hood every 5,000 miles. We want you to check your tires. We want you to rotate your tires every 5,000 miles, because that extends the life of the tires. If you keep the pressure up where it should be, even though we've got all their TPMS lights, we can have a tire down to right before it turns on that light, and it's causing excess heat, excess wear on that tire, and not really ever turn that low tire light on. So it's one of those things that I would say tires are just to keep on top of your tires. Mm-hmm. So probably number three would be
don't buy an electric vehicle.
Actually, well, we could go into electric, so that's not part of step three. But anyways, number three, I would probably say get your fluid serviced regularly. Mm-hmm. Again, manufacturers are trying to tell you 100,000 miles on a lot of your, besides your oil change, your transmission fluid, your differentials and all that stuff. But I'm sorry, you've got rotating masses in your transmission. You've got rotating masses in your gear boxes. You've got fluid through your brake system. You got fluid through your power steering system, unless it went to electric steering, which is now new problems we're having. But all that fluid heats up and cools down. It builds, it breaks down. It loses its ability to lubricate and work efficiently over time. We found that 3 years on brake fluid is a very good line, because by the time you've applied brakes and released brakes and you've heated brake fluid up and all that stuff, and I forget the technical term, but it actually absorbs moisture. So it takes the moisture in the system, because you don't want rusting brake lines, you don't want rusting internals, things like that. It suspends it inside the brake fluid. Mm-hmm. So you actually want to get that moisture back out of the system. So a 3-year process on that is very good. Your other fluids, like your transmissions, things like that. Normal everyday cars just driving around, ain't working it hard. You know, you see 60,000-ish miles is a good rule to kind of follow. Mm-hmm. If you're a truck and you're actually pulling, towing, things like that, 30,000 miles. And you won't find these in manufacturers. They'll say, oh, these are, you know, and some of the manufacturers are horrible saying, oh, we got a lifetime transmission fluid. Yeah. When that fluid goes bad, you've replaced your tranny. Mm-hmm. A $6,000 to $8,000 tranny. Let's do a few $100 service every 30,000 and you'll double the life of that tranny.
Absolutely. So what you're saying is listen to your mechanic, invest in your vehicle, and it'll cost you less in the long run.
Yes.
If you treat it right.
Yes.
It lasts longer.
Yes.
Yep. Absolutely. So that's three tips right there for all you car owners out there. Yeah. And I mean, it's been one great to hear your story, how you got into it, over at Curtis Automotive, you know, with your father-in-law and, you know, the wife, your son working at the shop also, like you said, tell us a little bit about that experience. I mean, having your, you know, family, you know, oriented around the shop.
It's got its ups and downs. Mm-hmm. Some days you don't, you know, want to deal with the people that you love, and some days it's perfectly fine. For the most part, we all, you know, I mean, we've all been together, you know, so many years that it's like, you know, I can guess what they're going to do. So that's a good thing. But in the end of the day, sometimes it's like, well, you had an argument today. You don't really want to, you know, mm-hmm. have to deal with them on a personal basis. But for the most part, we're all doing really good. You know, it's kind of hard to be balanced sometimes on, you know, especially your kids' therapy and stuff.
It's difficult, yeah.
I'm probably a little harder on my kids than I probably am other employees, just because I want them to have and lead the example, not to act like, you know, they're the owner's kids or anything like that. So I probably have a tendency to be a little harder on them than I do other employees. So
And then you go home and put your hand on his shoulder and say, I'm sorry you had a rough day. Your boss is a butthead, you know, but your dad loves you.
Yeah. Yes, I've had a few of those.
Yeah.
Well, that's cool. And how about some last pieces of advice for anybody out there looking to get into the automotive industry or in the trades industry of working with their hands and building a skill that they can use for years on end?
Well,
what's some advice you got?
I would say go for it. Just get out and do it. We have a lot of technical schools. There's a lot of places you can pick up all kinds of training. Here locally in the Valley, we've got EVIT, we got UTI, we've got one. There's another one and then there are some of our colleges that actually have technical training classes and things like that. So get out there and do it. And if you're really interested, a lot of businesses will actually send you through your schooling. You come in, say, hey, do I have the ability? Can I see if I can work with you guys? Can we work together? I need to learn. I don't know much. We train most of our people as we pick up people that they don't know much. We train them, things like that. So there's no reason to go, you know, get a $40,000 or $50,000 college debt when a lot of the trades will train you to exactly how you need to do things without incurring that debt. So you don't need a lot of schooling. While you will continually have schooling, you don't need to pay for a lot of schooling to get into a lot of the trades. I know people in construction. I know people in electrical. I know people in, you know, of course, I know the biggest for me is automotive and a bunch of different automotive shops. Mm-hmm. They will take in new people and do you have the ability, you know, the first few months is, do you even have the capability of handling this stuff? And then that's what they go through. If you've never, you know, and hopefully a lot of people figure this stuff out in high school, what they're good at, what they're not good at, you know, things like that. And so you start training yourself towards that realm. You know, we all could like to just sit around and be a, you know, cybersecurity person, but you know, I'm not wired for, I can't sit at a desk all day. I just can't do it. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, more now as I'm running people and managing things, I am sitting a little more at the desk, but I'm a runner. I just like to get up. I have to be moving. So everybody knows their own personality. So get out there, you know, you'll know what you like, what you're not. And we all like it. We all can't do something, but we all can do something. Mm-hmm. We all can't just work in one field, but right. Everybody's needed. And you're going to have a skill that somebody can use. So if you like, you know, if you liked wood shop in high school, go find a contractor. Yeah. If you liked working, you know, if you always liked tinkering with little electronics, you know, you did, you know, something like that in you know, in high school, if they had some type of electrical.
If you took your Xbox apart.
Yeah. If you took it apart, found the bad solder, put it together, you know, go find somebody in that field. Because, oh, man, I really liked it. That was fun being able to fix something. Yep. Find somebody there where you're going to use it. And again, a lot of businesses will start you as an apprentice and will put you through school or will help you with your schooling so you don't have to incur this huge debt that. So you get halfway through, you know, your technical school and like, this was not for me. And now you've got your, you know, $30,000, $40,000, $50,000 school debt and you're not even using it.
Yep.
That's what happens over and over. Solid advice, Eric. Really appreciate it. And that's what we talk about here on the Trades Podcast is, you know, what opportunities are out there for young adults. And you gave us a great deep dive into the automotive business and your shop. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you. And if you could, let everybody know, how can they reach out to you? Where do they find you guys? And what's the best way to reach out if they got any questions or want to apply?
Yeah. The website is My Car Hurts. It, like, as in, like, my car is hurting, like, so it needs to be fixed. Mm-hmm. So mycarhurts.com. Or, you know, I'm usually on the other end of the phone. My receptionist will probably pick up the phone, but 602-588-2878. Just say, hey, I heard Eric on the podcast. I got a few, you know, questions for him. I'm always there to answer. I like helping people. I'm always there to you know, answer questions. Can't diagnose everything over the phone, of course. And, you know, I'm there for just, you know, Q&As. I mean, it's just what I do. I like it.
Perfect. Awesome.
Love it. Thank you, Eric. We appreciate it. And we'll set space back with you when we're back out in Phoenix, for sure.
Yeah, this has been fun, guys.
Yeah.
Thank you.
That's good.
Thanks.